Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't yet joined our wonderful Flywheel Nation community, go to flywheelnation.com and join in the podcast conversations. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
Doing activities that just fulfills my passion outside of my main business, whether that's playing music, that's making shows, reading, or running for many, many miles, this is a time where I'm able to be thinking about what's another idea, have time to reflect on all of the knowledge that I've accumulated in even just the past 24 hours so that I can be innovative and be able to impact this innovation into my organization. I hope that every person feels that they have more superpowers and capabilities and being able to apply it into industries they never thought they could do. I encourage folks to take on things that they didn't think was in their skill set and they go and take that chance.
Welcome back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. Now, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast today as my guest, Nancy Liu. She's the co-CEO and co-founder of Blaze Technology, one of the fastest growing platforms that enables teams to build software and web applications without writing code. Nancy was named Forbes 30 Under 30. She's previously served as CEO and co-founder of Nplug, a leading global digital signage software company that she led from startup to its successful acquisition by Spectrio in March 2021, generating a 200 times return for her angel investors. Nancy also serves on the board of directors at CarParts.com, on the board of directors of Grupo Proeza. Previously, she served on the board of directors of Kindred Biosciences, which was acquired by Elanco for $440 million. And she served on the board of directors of Car Lots, which she helped merge with Shift Technology. She's also served as one of five voting members of the California Department of Motor Vehicles new motor vehicle board. She's a very busy lady. In college, Nancy co-founded and served as CEO of Nanology Bioscience, a venture-backed biotech company that invented polymers to eliminate refrigeration for vaccines. Imagine yourself as a member of an elite community where you can connect with our exceptional podcast guests, just like Nancy, and learn how to transform your marketing and your podcast into a relationship-focused growth catalyst. That's exactly what you'll gain by purchasing a digital token for the Flywheel Nation community. Now, in addition to direct contact with our outstanding podcast guests and with me, you'll also unlock access to an informative audio program, taking you behind the scenes and outlining the complete InnovaBuzz podcasting process. Don't miss out on this limited opportunity to enhance your marketing and your business. Head to innovabiz.co/flywheel and get set for a transformative journey. In our conversation today, Nancy talked to me about how to build the culture of a company right from the beginning, setting consistent values. She talked about bringing out and amplifying people's strengths in the team. And we talked about creating an environment that's reflective of the company leadership. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Nancy Liu. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from Los Angeles in California, Nancy Liu, who's the CEO, the co-CEO and co-founder of Blaze Technology. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Nancy. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
I'm delighted to be here, Jürgen.
Now, you've got a really interesting background, and I know we had a lot of fun in our pre-conversation, and I asked you when you found time to sleep. And you're basically an expert in starting and growing businesses and then selling those businesses once they get to a certain size, and then you repeat the process more or less. So I'm really looking forward to exploring that in some more detail. But before we do that, what's the impact you're making in the world today, Nancy?
For me, I like to bring out everyone's best. So bringing out and amplifying people's strengths.
Wow, that's pretty noble. So obviously, in all the work you've done with the startups and growing and building them, you've got to build a team around you, and you've been successful in doing that, I would imagine.
I do my best. I try, and I have an amazing team around me that also helps amplify everybody else on my team's strengths.
Yeah. Well, that kind of brings up a question, and I like to ask this question of a lot of people, which is around particularly when you're starting a company and then growing a team as you build that company, how do you build the culture right from the beginning so that it's consistent with your own values and as you said there, that people reflect that vision that you have to bring out everybody's best?
Well, I think of culture as something that is very reflective of the people in leadership. So as I think about some of the companies I've started, our culture transformed. What we were in the early days were very different than when we were, 7, 8 years old. I remember for one of the first companies I started in the early days, my co-founders and I, it was our first job. We were right out of college. We had no idea what we were doing. We hired all of our college friends. We all lived together in one house and worked out of that house. So that culture was pretty chaotic. It was a lot of fun. And it was, I guess, not a lot of companies would have that kind of experience. And then by the time we grew up, then we had most folks who had families where it wasn't all like 22, 23-year-olds. It was folks that, they wanted to have work-life balance. They didn't want to live in the house with us. And I remember when before we sold our company, one of the things that I think really reflected the change in our culture was in the early days, it was like lots of, beer pong at the office. To finally, the year before we sold our company, it was that we took everyone and their partners on a all-expense-paid trip to Mexico together, where we all just enjoyed and relaxed. Mm-hmm. And it was just a really wholesome experience and very different than what our early days were. So I like to say culture is something that changes with the leadership. And so I learned this. And so, we can always set out what we want the culture to be like. And I think it only works if it's really reflective and authentic to who you are as the leader. Otherwise, it's going to just be too hard, too much work, and people will see through it that it's not really truly the kind of culture that you live and that you own. So, we do our best. And I think when we sold the company, we were really happy with the culture because we were intentional about it and it was reflective of who we were as people.
Yeah, that's a really important point to, and I guess you said something there that I think is a key indicator of a culture that's maybe broken, maybe not working properly, and that's if it just feels too hard to maintain, and if you're having to put in all this effort and it almost feels like you're pushing the proverbial Sisyphus stone up the hill.
And I
then there's something wrong.
I relate to that because in the early days, I felt like when I started my company, because we were a tech company, that I needed to go do the, beer pong and drinking after work and happy hours. And that really wasn't me. I'm a person that I actually don't drink. And so I was trying to make myself do these things that I thought were what Silicon Valley tech companies would do. And instead, that wasn't. It became so much easier when instead it was we would go do beach volleyball together as a team, that we would go and do a cooking class together, that we would go on a beautiful island trip together. And not only was that more enjoyable, but I think everybody else also had a lot more fun.
Yeah, yeah. And also, again, it comes back to what you were saying before, it's got to be reflective of the senior leadership. And so if you're not inspired or excited to go on a cooking class with your coworkers or play beach volleyball with the coworkers, then you're unlikely to fit into the culture, right? So it's probably a good filter as well when you have the culture really clearly articulated and people know what it is before they even get to an interview stage.
Absolutely. And it's a great filter too during the interview process where we're really upfront about what the culture is like at our company. Because I always say an interview is not one way. It's as much as we're trying to learn about the candidate as they are about our company. And so when we say exactly, hey, here's what the culture is like, here's how we approach work, here's our mission, here's what drives us, here are the values that we agreed upon as a team, you can see, hey, does this fit into what you're looking for and where you want to spend, you know, call it 8+ hours a day being part of.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned a little while ago about setting up the first company more or less straight out of after graduating university. And I imagine you didn't have a lot of money to invest in there. So how did you go about getting the funds to bootstrap that company and then supporting its growth?
I definitely had no money when I started. I didn't come from a wealthy family. My parents were teachers. And so being able to go and, you know, say, hey, mom and dad, can I go borrow 100K or something to start a business? That was definitely out of the realm of possibility for me. So I was in charge as CEO of raising money for the company. And so what I did was I just went out and pitched to people. I went and built relationships. And when I say I pitched to different people, I'd be standing in line at a tech conference and whoever was in line in front of me, I'd just be like, hey, what do you do? Oh, you're an angel investor. Let me tell you about my company. I would, during this time period, I would also take the middle seat on an airplane so that I could just talk to the people next to me. For me, it was all about the sales funnel. If I increased the number of people that I shared my company with, I would increase the amount of chances potentially that I would meet an investor that might be interested. And let me tell you, that plane ride taking the middle seat paid off. I got introduced to the co-founder CEO of NVIDIA because I
sat
to one of his early employees. And so it's situations like that. And when I talk about, you know, standing in line behind somebody at a tech conference. It was, I believe, the Goldman Sachs conference in San Francisco. I was really lucky somebody gave me a comp ticket because certainly I couldn't pay to go attend that conference, but somebody got me a comp ticket. And so I was like, I need to maximize the 2 days that this conference is going on. And so that includes waiting in line as I'm getting my badge. And I pitched the person in front of me. And guess what? In a week, that person then became one of our angel investors.
All right. Well, I guess you worked hard on having a good pitch in place before you engaged in these conversations. So how did you learn about pitching and what angel investors are looking for in those early days when you really had no experience, or it probably wasn't something that you learned at university either, I imagine?
Well, I definitely got a lot of practice while I was in school. So I would say being able to pitch and present myself started at a really young age and in a place that you might not expect. It was actually at piano recitals and piano competitions where that was like my early days of pitching. And what do I mean by that? So when you go do a competition or a recital, oftentimes you have to go and say, hey, I'm Nancy Liu, and today I'm going to be performing the, you know, piano concerto and da 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 da. And that was the first, you know, kind of presentation. And it's about making sure that you communicate clearly and not being shy, making sure you're articulate in that communication, in that very small time frame where you're giving that person your first impression, their first impression of you. So I would say I had sort of from 6 years old practice in, call it pitching, you know, unofficially. And then of course in high school and even just participating in extracurricular activity, you're always recruiting new members. And in a sense, that in itself is pitching. When you're trying to convince somebody to do anything or to follow you in taking a certain action, that's pitching. So I would say lots of experience in high school and in college when I was in a lot of different leadership positions in school. I also started a couple of projects / startups while I was in college. And during that time, great learning experience. I pitched all day long because I was pitching for the organizations I was part of to recruit new members. And of course, the, you know, little startup projects that I was doing in college, I learned who to pitch to, how to frame it. In college, I definitely pitched some really silly, silly things to very powerful, impressive, famous investors. And I look back on that and I'm like, oh my gosh, I pitched one of the most famous biotech investors a dating app. And I'm like, okay, that was definitely, you know, I'm lucky that I even got that meeting, but clearly that was not the right audience. And so I learned really early on, making lots of mistakes, such that by the time I was out of college and immediately starting my first real startup company, I had, I would say, years of experience kind of pitching under my belt. And of course, now you can have a great pitch, but if you don't have the metrics and the product and the team to back you up, it's not going to work. Pitching, having a good pitch just gets you in the door. And so I was fortunate that I had an amazing team that was executing while I was going and working on getting investors and making sales. They were making the product so that I can make the sale and get the investor.
Hmm. Yes, I love how you looked at early experiences like performing piano and lobbying people, I guess, to join clubs or other interest groups at university or school as experience that can be used later on when you're pitching investors for a business idea. It's wonderful. And also the lessons from the failure, like pitching the dating app to the senior tech executive.
And lots of rejection, getting used to rejection. I think I just grew up, I think doing any kind of competitive sports or anything that's competitive, I think you just see that sometimes you'll win and oftentimes you'll lose and you might fail at what you do. And so I think when somebody is, you know, kind of nervous about going into a pitch, I still get nervous going into a pitch, even though I've done it, you know, so much now. And I think part of it is just making sure you're prepared. And being okay that if they say no, so what? They just said no. All right, move on. There's another person that you can go pitch to.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a really important message. And also it's their assessment of what you've just pitched. It's not necessarily what's wrong with your pitch. And I think that comes back. You reminded me of our kids were very prolific performers at a young age, particularly on piano and other instruments too. But they, those competitions that they performed in, and you'll know about this, it's always very subjective, the result that comes out of it. So sometimes they have done an amazing performance, just absolutely mind-blowing performance, and yet they got no prize at all. There were half a dozen prizes awarded and they went to other people. And other times they'd come off the stage and they'd be a little disappointed in their performance and they'd end up with a prize. So there's very subjective. But what that did, of course, is it kind of reinforces that point that you can do the best you can. And that's really the measure. and somebody else's judgment may or may not reflect that.
I completely relate to that. Your kids must be really great musicians if they're doing the competitions, because I always joke, nothing in life can now stress me out as much as piano competitions. I'm so glad I had all those experiences early on, because those were really high pressure environments where everyone's, playing basically one of three songs and pieces. And if you make any kind of mistake, everyone knows it. So I'm grateful for those experiences, but definitely glad I don't do that anymore.
Well, coming back to the business side, one of your early tech companies was a biotech company, and I think that was the one you started while you were still in school. And what fascinated me about the story was you had no background in biotech. First of all, why pick that? But then how did you take that challenge on without having the knowledge of the product or the science behind the product that was driving the business?
I think that when I wanted to go pursue this, I was sometimes really good when you don't know what you don't know. And so as a college senior, having taken maybe one chemistry and one biology course in my life, I was like, yes, let's go start a biotech company, because I didn't know how difficult it was. And I think if I knew how difficult it was to start any company, let alone a biotech life sciences company, which I think is probably some of the hardest companies to go start and make successful, I don't think I would have done it. So I'm really glad I didn't have this knowledge before. So I was like, yeah, biotech company. I met this amazing PhD, MD scientist, my co-founder, Dr. Balaji Sridhar, randomly at a bar. He had this idea that he was working on for his PhD. And I was like, yes, let's turn this into a company. Let's go commercialize this technology that can eliminate refrigeration for vaccines. That sounds amazing. Let's just go and do it. And for me, it was all about assembling the right team. I knew how to put together that pitch, go and get money. And I had somebody whose expertise was building the product and developing the technology. So I said, I'll take care of the finances and the strategy of how we commercialize. And if you just take care of the technology, this is going to be fantastic. So that's what we did. And so the company is still successfully operating today. We get to work with some amazing companies, but it was certainly not something that I would have done if I had known how difficult it was and how unqualified I was to go start a biotech company.
What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced there, and lessons that you learned that you took forward into your next business ventures?
I think one of the most important pieces, how much is somebody willing to pay for this? Who is the target audience? What do you need to make happen for somebody to say, yes, I'll go try out this product? Particularly in life sciences, this is important, because in order to get to that, let's call it MVP product in the life sciences, it will probably take tens of millions of dollars. Versus in tech, sometimes you can get that MVP out in a couple of months, maybe even weeks, with a lot less investment. And so in the life sciences biotech, it was doing as much market research as possible before going and setting out, hey, here is the research that we're going to go down, and here's the product pathway. Because in biotech, the product timelines, they are like 5-year horizon. Versus in software, we do 2-week sprints, where every 2 weeks we're literally launching new features. So very, very different, which means all the more important that at the beginning, you're doing lots of the work to make sure that you're going down the right path.
And the idea of who's the target customer, I think, is a really big one as well.
Yes. And one of the things I learned too, and I, invest in a lot of startup companies now, and I always tell the founders, don't care about the feedback somebody gives you on your product if they're not your target customer. Only ask the people and really take the feedback. If somebody doesn't think your product is a good idea and they're not willing to pay for it, first ask, okay, is this person or this organization part of my target audience? If they're not, really discount that feedback. But if they are somebody that's exactly the type of person you're trying to target and market to, then take that feedback and put a lot more weight to it. So sometimes when someone pitches me a product, I was like, look, I'm the wrong audience. I don't like the product, but that's because, you know, for example, it's a, you know, like a cookware company. And I'm like, I don't cook, so not the greatest audience, but let me have you talk to a couple of folks that are cooks and they can give feedback on whether this is good or not. And then I'll take that feedback and determine, hey, should I make this investment or not?
Yes. I had to laugh because just before I jumped on this show, I had a knock on my door here. So I'm working out of my home office and studio, and I had a knock on the door outside, and I answered it because I thought it might be a parcel. It wasn't. It was a door-to-door salesman. So, oh, do we still have those in post-COVID days? And there was a young chap that started off the usual scripted pitch. Oh, isn't it lovely here? And you've got this lovely park across the road, and I don't know this area at all, and it's just beautiful. And how long have you been here? And I said, you know what? I've got an appointment in 10 minutes. Get to the point. And he said, I want to speak to you about solar panels. Have you ever considered putting solar panels on your roof and getting energy? And I said, have you had a look at our roof? It's absolutely covered with solar panels. And so, yeah, clearly did no research on target audience.
That's right. So yeah. Got to do the research, make sure you're talking to the right person, and make sure that they don't already have solar panels if you already
have solar panels. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Now, one of the other things, and I alluded at the beginning that I wondered when you had time to sleep, you're also in the TV business. You've had a couple of Emmy Award shows, Emmy Awards for production, I think. So how did you get into the TV business from biotech and starting up other companies?
Well, I always say, regardless of what kind of industry it is, what I like to do is bring out the best and support the team and make sure they realize all of their capabilities and strengths. So I actually really like getting involved in things that seem really out of my wheelhouse, whether that is in biotech or even starting Blaze with my co-founders, this new company where, you know, we're helping people be able to build software without writing code. I'm not a coder. So how am I going to make software that helps other people build software without code? Well, I've got my co-founders who are brilliant at what they do, and where I help is on the strategy, on the marketing, sales, and financing. So similarly, in the TV business, it's just like any other kind of organization. And so I was introduced to a director who had the idea and a vision for what he wanted for his show. And he's very good at what he does on the creative side. And he said, hey, I could use some help on these other areas, including being able to cast some really awesome names in the entertainment industry, being able to get funding and help getting distribution, and of course, making sure that we get lots of marketing publicity out so that we get the, you know, for the Television Academy, for them to notice us and nominate us and vote for us. And so I was like, I'll help in those areas. And so he really asked me to be a co-producer. I went and helped raise money for the TV show, brought in investors, brought in some great talent to be part of the show. And that's really how I got involved. Is again, I say, all right, I recognize that this director is amazing, so talented. I want to be part of that team, and I want to help amplify his capabilities by bringing in my set of skills.
Yeah, fascinating. And I like how you kind of you're really clear about your own skills, and you chunk that up and say, well, I can apply that to any area really. And if it's something that interests me, there's nothing to stop me jumping across into a different area. And just because I don't know anything about the technology or whatever behind the product, as it were, that doesn't matter. My skills are what I'm bringing to the table, and they're applicable.
That's exactly right. And I think everyone has the capacity actually to expand their skill set into other areas. And I think we actually have a lot of capabilities to do this than we imagine. I'm just grateful that I got offered some of these opportunities. And so I still love getting involved in lots of different companies, and the companies I get involved with, I said, all right, I'm going to help you reach the highest level of your success. So definitely fortunate in the past couple of years being part of teams where we've sold our company for hundreds of millions of dollars. And again, for me, I'm just one player in helping this team succeed. But for me, I hope to amplify everyone's capabilities on that team.
Excellent. All right. Well, this is fascinating, Nancy. We could go on talking ages and delving into some of the technology itself, although it's probably more the marketing, sales, and fundraising area that are your expertise and you can contribute. But I think it's a good point now on the show to move on to the buzz, which is our lightning round of five questions that I ask of every guest. And the idea is that your answers will inspire the listener to go and do something awesome in these areas as a result.
All right, let's do it.
What's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Take time for themselves to think and have that alone time to think and be creative.
Yeah, I think that's really valuable advice. And sometimes as entrepreneurs, we kind of get stuck in the hamster wheel, I like to say. Actually, it's counterintuitive to say, I'm going to take that time off to think and then come back to whatever I'm doing because I'll end up being a lot more productive or come up with some innovative ideas that are going to make this job easier. All right, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
For me, it is doing activities that just fulfills my passion outside of my main business, whether that's playing music, that's making shows, reading, or going and running for many, many miles. This is a time where, again, I'm able to be thinking about, all right, what's another idea? And have time to reflect on all of the knowledge that I've accumulated in even just the past 24 hours so that I can go and be innovative and be able to impact this innovation into my organization.
So you take those other activities as part of your quiet time because you're doing them yourself and you've got reflection happening at the same time.
Yes, these are activities for me that get me into flow. So I don't know if you know folks know about that concept, but I think that's an important thing to try to see. What is an activity that gets you into flow? And for me, a lot of my great ideas, motivation, inspiration comes during those times.
Wonderful. All right. Do you have a favorite resource you use most often?
My friends. So I lean on my friends and I ask them for help and questions. And they're my resources, even when I'm not looking for them to be resources, because just how they operate and the kind of people they are, the kinds of businesses they operate, how they support one another inspires me. And I know that I can always count on them. So it's always nice to know you have folks that are supporting you. And I think support is, in general, the best resource to have.
Yeah. And I'm sure that's important for some of the opportunities you outlined earlier and how you went about pitching for investors or connecting with people that ended up being co-founders later on, at reaching out to people and asking for help and also helping where you can.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project on track?
It is to make sure that you actually verbalize and communicate what is expected on that project and share it with everybody. So at the beginning of a project, I always say, here's the goal, here's the timeline, here are the milestones. And then whenever we reach the timeline, we go back and we say, is this what we expected? Did we reach it or not? And making sure that we always have a person associated with any of the deliverables. Ownership and accountability is key.
And communication there.
Yes.
I heard as well. Yeah. Excellent. All right. Now, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
I would say going and doing something that is out of their comfort zone and pushing themselves to go as deep into whatever that is as possible. So it could be really anything. It could be that you become an amazing video game player, or it could be that you become an amazing chef, but picking that one thing that has nothing to do with your work and diving deep into it and be able to say, this was something that was very much out of my wheelhouse and I've dedicated hours and it shows discipline. And I think that's one thing that really differentiates people, is that if I can recognize this person has discipline, it speaks a lot to many of their other attributes.
Hmm. Yeah. And also with some of those things, it comes back to what you were saying earlier about some of the lessons that you learnt from different activities and then applying those back into your business. So I think there's lessons there. If people are open to the experience and enjoying the experience, that first of all, they're probably getting that me time and reflection time. They're probably also learning lessons that if they're having that reflection in a positive way, that they can apply to their business then.
Yes, exactly.
Hmm. All right. Well, thanks, Nancy. This has been really great. Now, where can people find out more about you and about Blaze Technology, which we haven't really talked about that much today, and about the work you do, as well as maybe even get in touch and say thanks for what you shared?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find more about Blaze at blaze.tech. I think it's, you know, the site that I personally actually spend the most time on, but that's because, you know, I'm building it and adding new things into it every single day. And then they can also find us on Twitter at blazenocode. And then you can also find me, which is just at Nancy_Liu on Twitter.
All right. And we'll have links to all of those in the show notes, of course. Nancy, what action would you like our listener to take away from our conversation today?
I hope that every person feels that they have more superpowers and capabilities and being able to apply it into industries they never thought they could do. And so I hope that I encourage folks to take on things that they didn't think was in their skill set and they go and take that chance.
Mm, wonderful. There's a big call to action and a challenge to everyone. So we'd love to hear what happens when you start to do that, put that into action. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously, and your wisdom and all the experience that you've gained in the many activities that you've done in your young life. Nancy, I've really enjoyed our conversation today, and there's so much I think that we can all learn from the conversation. So thanks so much, and please do stay in touch.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Jürgen.
I hope you enjoyed that really engaging and insightful conversation with Nancy and took something away from her episode. So right now, why don't you reflect on activities that fulfill your passion outside of business? Recognize that you have unique superpowers that you can bring to that passion and go deep into those activities. I think you'll find that this will spark all kinds of new ideas, both for that activity and for your business. I'd love to hear what you discover. Nancy's episode can be found at innovabiz.co/Nancy Liu. That's spelt NanXiliu. NanXiliu. That's Nancy Liu. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/Nancy Liu. You'll also find contact information there for getting in touch with Nancy, as well as links to the Blaze Technology website, to Nancy's social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation. Enjoying this episode? Great! Then be brave enough to spread the word by sharing it with someone who will find it just as valuable. And show your support by acquiring the episode bookmark token from innovabiz.co www.ryanhoff.co/bookmarks. For a small investment, you'll receive your very own permanent record of the show and actively contribute to the guest and the podcast's success as the revenue is shared equally between us. Share, support, and keep the inspiring conversations alive. Thanks for listening. We'd love you to leave a review on this episode. It will help us to make the podcast better for you. Simply go to lovethepodcast.com/InnovaBuzz and pick your preferred platform. Now remember to go to innovabuzz.co/flywheel to collect your unique digital token, which will give you membership of the Flywheel Nation community, where you'll have direct access to our amazing podcast guests, as well as to a short audio program that walks you through the entire InnovaBuzz podcasting process. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got yet more fantastic guests lined up. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.